Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
This week's show is for the kids, but you can listen in if you want some jungle adventure. We'll listen to The Adventure of Stacy from 1939.
Presenting the adventures of Jungle Jim. The adventures of Jungle Jim, broadcast weekly over this station, are dramatized from the full-color action pictures to be found in the Comic Weekly, the world's greatest comic supplement that comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Join the 11 million adults and 6 million youngsters who make their weekends more enjoyable reading the world's greatest comic and adventure pictures by the world's best artists, featured in every issue of the Comic Weekly. Insist on the Sunday newspaper that brings you the Comic Weekly. Jungle Jim's desperate plan to rescue Lil and the Stacys from the bloodthirsty moon-worshipping natives has so far worked to perfection. Jungle Jim, hidden in the idol, strikes down the native high priest just at the moment he is offering Lil up as a sacrifice to the moon god. When old Nala attempts to take up the high priest's work, Kolu, hidden up in a tree, strikes her down with a well-aimed arrow before she can use the long sacrificial knife on Lil. All this is too much for the superstitious natives, who, thinking their moon god has struck down both the high priest and old Nala, the awe-stricken natives turn and rush off in panic into the jungle. When the natives have disappeared, Jim, losing no time rounding up his little band, prepares for a quick getaway before the natives recover their senses and return. But Jim's departure is delayed when Stacy's wife, a victim of the strange jungle fever, becomes unconscious.
She's out like a light, Jim. Her fever's still very high, and her pulse and heartbeat are barely registering. I'm afraid she's in a very critical condition.
Isn't there anything we can do for her? Surely I'm not going to lose her now after saving her from those bloodthirsty fanatics. There must be something we can do.
Take hold of yourself, Stacy. Don't get panicky. Remember, we don't want to lose your wife either. We worked hard and risked our lives to save her.
It's all over now, Tuan. Natives run through jungle, back into hills. Plan work good, Tuan. Save everyone.
Everyone but Mrs. Stacy, Kolo. She's been the victim of some strange jungle fever. Almost destroyed her mind, and now she's unconscious. In bad shape.
Say, Jim, maybe Kolo knows what to do. Kolo, Mrs. Stacy's been bitten by a little black spider that old Nala had let down on a string while Mrs. Stacy was asleep.
That be what we call kulika. Spider bite not make you die. Only be very sick. Bring bad fever. Very bad. Then make long sleep. Then you start get well again.
You mean when the poison reaches its full power in the victim's system, it produces a state of coma, just like certain drugs?
That be right, Tuan.
Thank heaven she's going to be all right again. Perhaps with this fever, we'd better keep her well wrapped up.
Here, Miss Lil, take Kolu coat. It be good, keep her warm.
I'll take care of her now, Lil. Perhaps we'd better lift her off that damp ground.
Well, I hate to seem heartless about all this, but we can't delay any longer. We've got to get out of this part of the country as quickly as possible.
Yes, Tuan.
No telling when those natives are liable to regain their courage, rally again, come back and recapture us all. Boy, that would mean instant death to every one of us.
You're right, Jim. The sooner we get started, the better. But how about him, Stacy?
We'll just have to take turns carrying her. Stacy first, and then I'll relieve him, and Kolo can bring up the rear. Watch out for any natives that might follow us.
Be very good, Tuan. Which way we go now?
Well, we'll head due west. Make for those foothills that skirt the mountains on the side of the river. We'll work west and south until we hit the river. Then we can follow our old trail back to the first boat landing. Well, what do you say? Everybody ready?
All ready, Tuan.
How about it, Lil? You feel strong enough for a long hike?
What I lack physically, I'll make up mentally. All I need to spur me on is the thought of being recaptured by those howling moon worshippers. Let's go. I'll make it somehow.
Don't worry about me, Jim. I'll follow through with every ounce of strength that's in me to save Helen from another ordeal like this.
Right you are. Okay, Kolo. Bring those ropes along. They may come in very handy. All right. We're off for home. And let's hope our good luck holds out.
Realizing that there remains but a few hours until daylight, Jim leads his party as fast as their already badly shaken bodies and minds will permit. They clear the edge of the jungle and push up toward the foothills. It's a painful, torturous journey and slows up the resolute little band. But the thought of the danger behind them gives them the necessary strength and determination to carry on. But in the meanwhile, some of the bravest of the natives, led by their old chief, return to the scene of the sacrificial ceremony and discover the holes in the idol.
There, my warriors! What I have spoken is true! The death of our holy one and the old woman was not by the hand of the Mighty One! We have been tricked! The altar and body of the Mighty One have been defiled by disbelievers!
Disbelievers!
You are right, most wise and brave father. See upon the ground the marks of the white man's boots and the footprints of others.
We must avenge the death of the Holy One and the old woman. The white disbelievers and desecrators of the Mighty One must not escape us. They have left a trail that we must follow. I will lead you. Wait! Wait! We must call more warriors. We must be strong in numbers to spread out over the country and track down the killers of our people. Sound the drums! Sound the drums! Go, two of the swiftest runners to the village quickly, and return with the cursed guns of the white men. They shall be used to kill those who have defiled the altar of the Mighty One. Sound the signal drums again to rally the faithful.
See, brave father, the faithful are returning. Let us follow the trail now before the cursed white men get beyond our reach.
Come, my faithful ones. We follow the trail to avenge the death of our most holy one. Speed away to the capture.
Those drums have stopped altogether. We've managed to get out of earshot of them.
Do you really think those natives did come back to the ceremonial grounds and discovered how you tricked them, Jim?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. If they have, they're going to be hopping mad and out for blood with a vengeance. That's why we've got to put plenty of distance between us.
Tuan. Trail here. Go long way down valley. Round face of big hill. Maybe it could save time. We go this way. Climb up.
I was thinking about that, Kolo. The face of this hill is fairly smooth. With those ropes to help us, we can haul ourselves up. Cole, we'll do it. You go up first. Climb away up and, until you find a ledge to work from. Then lower the rope down and haul up Mrs. Stacy. I'll send Stacy up beside her to guard against any accident. Lil and I will try to make it together.
Be very good, Tuan. Cole will be up there quick.
Stacy, you rest up. That climb up there won't be easy. We've got to take the chance. Going up the face of this hill is going to save us a few precious miles. And we need every yard of ground we can gain on those murderous savages.
I'm in pretty fair shape, Jim. I can make it all right.
How far do you think those natives are behind us, Jim?
Well, it was a good 2 hours or more from the time we got away until we first heard the drums in the distance. It must have taken them a little while to get organized, so the rate we've been traveling, I imagine we're still 2 or 3 miles ahead of them.
Going up the face of this hill might throw them off our trail. Because we won't leave any footprints to follow.
They'll naturally follow the trail around the hill, down into the valley. They'll lose all trace of our footprints. They'll double back and start investigating where our trail ended. That will delay them quite a bit. My guess is they're not very proficient mountain climbers. These lowland people, as a rule, don't like hillier, mountainous country.
What was that?
Oh, that's Cole's signal. He's lowering the rope. Huh? Now, there it is. Grab the end, Lil. Give a little pull to let him know we've got it.
Okay.
Stacy, pull off your shirt. Roll it up like I'm doing.
All right.
Gotta make some pads to keep the ropes from cutting into your wife's body. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, Jim, what's next?
Lil, pull on that rope a little more. Okay. Easy now. Okay. Now, Stacy, hold her a while. While I tie her up.
All right.
and she goes up slowly, you crawl up beside her.
Yeah?
But don't try to carry her or to hang on to that rope. Remember that. Because Kolo up there is pulling her dead weight up the side of the hill.
Very well, Jim. I'll be careful.
Now she's all set. Wait till I give Kolo the signal to start pulling her up. Three sharp tugs at the rope.
One, two, three.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Stacy. Work on this side of her. That's it. Up you go. You're doing all right. Now then, Lil. It's up to us. You ready?
All set, Jim. You want me to go first?
Yes. And don't be afraid to yell out if you get too tired. Good, Lil. We made it. Everything all right, Cole?
Yes, Tuan. Mrs. Stacy be better now, too. Maybe cold air make her feel good. She tried to talk a little bit.
Oh, that's swell. Well, it's daylight now. We've got to watch our step. Keep well down and until we get off the top of the hill.
What has happened? Where am I? It's so cold. I'm so cold. Mr. Brill. Mr. Brill. Lil. Lil.
I'm right here, Helen. Everything's all right now.
But why did we leave the hut? It was nice and warm there. Where are we going?
You know what I promised you.
You would take me home. Home. Are we? Are we?
Yes, Helen. It's all over now. We're going home.
Having successfully rescued Lil and the Stacys from certain death at the hands of the fanatical moon worshippers, Jungle Jim is now faced with the problem of making good their complete escape. Immediately after the natives had fled in panic from the sacrificial grounds, Jim rallied his little party and pushed off for the nearest outpost. Their progress was considerably handicapped by the complete collapse of Mrs. Stacy, who had been carried by each of the men in turn. The frightened natives, in the meantime, got fresh courage, and led by their resolute chief, lose no time in pursuing Jim and his party. In order to gain ground on his pursuers, Jim takes a desperate chance and hauls his party up the face of a high hill instead of following a long trail around the base of the hill. So far, the natives haven't discovered Jim's brilliant piece of strategy and are trying to pick up his trail in the valley below. Next morning, after a brief rest, Jim prepares to continue the journey and awaits a report from Kolo, who has been scouting the enemy.
Well, Lil, how's Mrs. Stacy? Coming out of that trance and fever all right?
I think so, Jim. Although time alone will tell. Her fever's gone down considerably and the chills are gone. I moved her over where she could get some sun. It's apparently done her some good. She sat to sleep again.
How is she, Mr. Bill? Is she all right again?
I guess so. But I don't think she'll be able to travel under her own power yet.
We're on a fairly high plateau here, and I think the warm sun and dry air will probably help her.
Well, I hope so, Jim. It'd be awful to lose her now.
Oh, don't worry, Stacy. You're not going to lose her. She'll be all right soon.
Yes, Stacy. She'll be safe now. We'll probably have to carry her again today, but once we get out of this hostile country, we can make more time.
Well, I don't mind carrying her or anything.
Oh, we'll be able to hunt then and get her some solid food. That'll help.
The sleep she's getting is doing her a lot of good right now, too.
Look. Look, Jim.
What?
Look, Kolo's signaling you from the hill over there.
Okay. He's probably sighted some of those natives again. Be ready to move at a moment's notice. I'll be back in a few minutes.
What is it, Kolo?
Juan, look. Down in valley. See, on trail by trees. The moon people.
So it is. Looks as though they're having a council of war.
Yes. I stand for a long time, watch. I see. Now they run up and down trail. Look all over for footprints.
Kolo, I get it now. They finally realize they've lost our trail and can't figure out where we've disappeared to.
Yes, Juan.
Look at them.
sure are doing a lot of arm waving and talking.
Mm. See, native over there. He be chief. See now.
Uh-huh. He's sending his scouts down the trail again. There's two more up at this end. Just about where we climbed up last night.
Mm.
Boy, oh boy, I hope they don't discover any evidence of our climb. If they do and start up the side, we've got to prepare to either fight or run, Colo.
Yeah. We watch. Look. They see side of hill. Now turn around. They not find anything, Tuan. See, two natives run back to chief now.
I wouldn't be so sure they haven't found something, Colo. They're turning back there in an awful hurry. Guess we'll just sit tight and wait to see what happens down there.
From the look on your face, my son, you bring bad tidings. What news of the cursed white one do you bring, my son?
White one's gone, brave father.
Curse it!
The trail be bare. We look. We do not find trail of white one.
We are cursed.
The mighty one is angry, brave father. He has let the white man escape us.
You speak with wisdom beyond your years, my son. The mighty one is displeased. I know not what our sin is, but he does not bless the hunt for our enemies. They have escaped us by some white man's magic that makes them invisible to us. Now we must return to our homes in humiliation and sorrow.
Yes.
To make reparation, we must repair the altar and repair the idol of the mighty one. Then all of us, with fasting and with repentance and with prayer, we must show ourselves to be worthy of his great power and blessings. We have lost our battle. We are disgraced and humiliated. Come. Come, my sons. Turn your faces to the east and journey homeward. Tomorrow we shall begin the great fast of repentance to the mighty one. Go now. Go now, my son.
Look, Colo. The natives are leaving. Look. They're heading back down the trail of their own village. They've given up the chase, Colo. We're safe again.
That be good, Tuan. For a long time, it be bad. Now, we take plenty time.
You're right, Colo.
Not have to hurry now.
Come on, Colo. We can go back and give Lil and the Stacys the good news. We're in luck again, Colo.
With the last threat of danger from hostile natives removed, Jim takes his time moving the little band safely back into friendly territory. The only cause for worry and concern among the little party now is the condition of Helen Stacy. After a few days of travel, Jim decides to camp for a few days so that Helen Stacy, now almost recovered from the fever and attendant madness, may regain some of her strength.
Well, Lil, how do you like the spot?
Oh, it's great, Jim. We couldn't find a more ideal location. And although this was your idea to help Helen Stacy, it's going to do us all a lot of good.
Yes, I don't mind admitting I'm enjoying the prospect of a rest, too. But while we're on the subject, how's the patient?
Doing fine.
Good.
The only thing I can't understand is why her memory is only partially restored. The only part of her past life she can remember is the day or two we spent in the hut back in the native village. She doesn't recognize Stacy as her husband yet. In fact, nothing of her life before she fell under that spell.
Well, there are certain aspects of that case that still puzzle me, Lil. I can't understand why old Nala should conspire with that tribe to burn Stacy's home, capture his wife, and keep her in a state of madness. Not only that, but she devilishly planned it so that Stacy should witness his wife's insanity and her ultimate death at the hands of those moon worshippers. I've been thinking, there must be a motive.
Well, I'm afraid, Jim, that only Helen Stacy knows the answer. We'll just have to wait until she's well enough to enlighten us.
Quarantine! Quarantine! Look!
Hey, look over there, Lil.
Hmm.
Look what Colo is bringing into camp.
Oh.
A nice young deer.
Oh, oh.
Coming right over, Colo.
Oh, that's a sight to gladden anyone's eyes. Oh, boy, what I can do to a nice venison steak.
See here. Here's one.
Nice work, Colo. Where'd you bag it?
Be over by river, Twan. I wait since daybreak for deer to come. Deer come for drink. I have bow and arrow ready. He come. Now, good meat for dinner.
You said it, Colo. Lend me your knife and I'll get busy butchering it while you get a rest.
I'll take care of building up the fire.
Hey, what's going on over there?
Oh, well, come on and see.
Oh, so this is the cause of all the rejoicing, eh?
Colo, you certainly win the prize with that.
Me tired, carry all the way myself.
Nice shooting with your bow and arrow, Colo. Looks as though we're in for a feast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim, what can I do to help things along?
Well, I'll tell you. You just give me a hand, and I'll show you how to skin a deer and butcher it ready for the fire.
Say, that's fair enough. The trick I've always wanted to learn is, is Helen still sleeping, Lil?
Yes, she was a few minutes ago, unless Jim or Colo woke her up shouting. The rest is doing her a world of good.
She could only get back her memory. She still doesn't show the least sign of recognition where I'm concerned. No matter how much we talk about the old days that school and college, the honeymoon trip, even her own home and family, she still doesn't recognize any of it.
Oh, don't worry about it, Stacy. Remember, she's had some very bad shocks. And they've upset her mental balance to such an extent that it'll take quite a little while to bring her back to normalcy.
Well, I hope she does get back to normal.
But fresh air, sunshine, plenty of rest, kind, gentle nursing, and want some good food will do the trick, all right?
That's Helen.
Help! Help!
Well, look. She's standing up outside her lean-to. Well, she must have had a dream.
Well, I'll go to her right away. It's all right, Helen. I'm coming.
Help! Help! Help me! Help me! Red, where are you? Help
Jim.
Me! Help!
Jim, did you hear that? She actually called me by my name. She called me Red. She used to call me that when we were in school together. She must be all right again.
Yes, hurry. Go to her, Stacy.
I'm coming, Helen, dear. I'm coming. Oh, thank heaven she knows me.
The successful completion of Jungle Jim's adventure with the Stacys comes with the return to normalcy of Stacy's wife. The dangerous fever that had completely unbalanced her mind has gone, and she has fully recovered her health and memory. But before resuming the journey back to civilization, Jim, anxious to clear up the mystery of why old Nala vents such hatred on the Stacys, questions Helen Stacy.
Well, Mrs. Stacy, if you feel up to it, I'd like to ask you a few questions as to old Nala's motive in causing you and your husband so much unhappiness.
I feel perfectly healthy now, Jim, thanks to Lil's careful nursing. I don't mind discussing the cause at all.
Oh, good. And as I was saying, perhaps you can suggest a motive for her barbaric behavior.
I think the motive was revenge.
Revenge, Helen? Why in the world do you think that?
Well, Red, you know that many years ago when your uncle first came here, he hired Nala as housekeeper.
Sure, she was a young woman then, and her people's village was close by here to Uncle's plantation.
Your uncle was rather a stern, God-fearing man. And when he found out the weird, bloodthirsty beliefs of the tribe, he forced Nala to give up her people and their horrible religious beliefs.
Yes, I knew that he tried to convert her to Christianity and even went so far as to buy the land from her tribe, paid them to move far into the jungle.
But surely that wouldn't constitute the motive for such a fiendish revenge.
No, Lil. Nala tried to absorb Christian principles and served Red's uncle faithfully for many years.
Oh, that's right. He even wrote home telling us that he'd provided for her in his will. He had instructed us to see that a portion of the plantation and a small sum of cash was given to Nala upon the execution of his will.
Well, what happened to make him change his mind?
Well, she didn't figure in the will when you inherited the estate, did she, Red?
No, Jim. I was the sole heir. You see, he made a new will.
Oh, I see. And what was the reason for that move?
Well, as Nella grew older, she drifted back to her old beliefs. She encouraged the high priest and members of the tribe to visit her. Not on the plantation itself, of course, but off in the edge of the jungle, where one of the old idols still stood, they held their religious ceremonies. Red's uncle heard of this, and in a fit of anger...
Stop! Stop! You blasphemous heathen, stop, I say! Cease this blasphemous idol worshiping! Oh, so it's you, Nala. After all I've done for you and your people, you have broken your promise to me. You have forsaken the teachings of Christianity and returned to this horrible, heathenish idol worshiping. And that horrible old man you call a high priest has returned to defile my property with these blasphemous ceremonies after I bought this land from his people and gave him money to move away. You have all disobeyed me, broken your words. Very well, I shall punish you, all of you. Moko! Moko!
Yes, sir.
Moko, bring your men with the axes. Chop down this idol. Break up this altar and then set fire to everything.
Yes, Master Stacy.
Now you, as high priest, take your followers away. Hurry, before my men drive you off. And remember, if you ever return, I'll punish you severely. Go on now, go, go! Moko, light the torch, set the fire.
Yes, Master.
Now you, Nala, you go back to the plantation at once. Wait for me until I return.
Ready now with fire, Master Stacy.
Very well. Light it. You're going to be punished. You have been deceiving me all this time. You have been meeting your people secretly. You have turned back to the worship of idols.
Nala, so sorry. Very sorry. Not do it again, Master Stacy.
I promised you if you were good and remained faithful and true to my teachings that some fields and animals would be yours. And I would leave money to take care of you. It was so written in this paper. But to punish you, Nala, I'm tearing it up and burning it.
No. No, Master Stacy. Nala, be good now. Not go to people no more.
I can't trust you. So I tear up the paper and burn it. See? Now, Nala, I'm going to wait. And if I find you are true and remain faithful, I will make another paper, and you shall have the seals and the money.
Well, that's quite an interesting story, Mrs. Stacy. But what happened finally?
Fear and superstition had too strong a hold on Nala. And despite our uncle's warning, the high priest sent messages to her, and she found ways and means of stealing away to the ceremonies.
And your uncle caught her again?
Yes, and he had her followed. And he decided she was beyond redemption. So he made a new will, leaving everything to Red.
Yes, that's right, Helen. And a few weeks later, he died. Well, we came out, and, well, you know the rest.
No, not so fast, Red. That isn't all. There must have been some enmity between Nala and your wife.
Yes. I was afraid of her from the day we moved in and took over the estate. The way she looked at me, I could sense the deep hatred she felt for us.
Well, Helen, you never told me how you felt.
Of course not. You had plenty of other worries on your mind without me adding to them.
Well, did she ever actually tell you how she felt?
Yes. The time that Red had trouble with his shipments up the river and was gone for so long, I decided to try and get her to tell me what was wrong. She was very evasive at first, but I finally got her to tell me the story that I told you about the will.
And did you have any idea that old Nala was going to have a revenge on you?
I suspected there was something wrong when Nala used to go away on long trips into the jungle. Then I used to hear the native drums beating, and I could hear them singing. They seemed to be getting closer to the house all the time.
Tell me, Mrs. Stacy, did you ever see any of Nala's people around the plantation?
Yes. I'm almost sure I saw the high priest meet old Nala at the edge of the clearing a night or two before Red came back from his trip. I was looking out of my bedroom window when I saw Nala cross the clearing. And just as she approached the edge of the clearing, a native came out. They stood talking, and they both began looking up and pointing to the moon.
Was it a full moon, do you remember, Helen?
I'm quite sure it was, Lil. It was very bright, because I could see things almost as clearly as in daylight.
That was the high priest with her. Being at the time of the full moon, they were probably plotting then to use you as a sacrifice to the moon god.
You're probably right. Well, I watched them for a while, and finally I saw the native open a small bag and take something from it and give it to old Nala.
That was the little box containing the little black spider, whose bite they used to put you in that feverish trance.
I left my room and came down as she was entering the house. She was clutching something tightly in one hand and tried her best to avoid me. She slinked off into the kitchen. I went to bed, and that's all I ever remember.
That's easy to explain now. It was the night of the full moon, when her people in bygone days made a human sacrifice to the moon. Being jealous of you and your inheritance, she decided on revenge, and her warped mind planned that diabolical plot.
Then it was old Nala's idea to revive the custom of the human sacrifice. And not the high priest.
Well, certainly she sold him on the idea and persuaded him to get her the black spider. And that night, while you were asleep, she sneaked into your room and let the spider bite you, just as she did in the village when I almost caught her.
Why, certainly, Lil. She even went so far as to let that spider bite you at certain intervals to intensify the fever until it completely robbed you of your senses.
Yes, and what a fool I was when I came home and found Helen here in that condition. See, I hurried down the river for the doctor. And I left her here, Jim, all alone with... Well, Nala was in the room. In fact, I insisted that Nala remain here right at her side. I threatened to whip her. She left, Helen.
And all that time, she was poisoning me with those spider bites.
And as soon as you were well on your way down the river, she signaled her people to come in and spirit you away to their village, where you were to be sacrificed.
That's right, Mr. Brill. And Nala's revenge on me was to hold me prisoner and let me stand by helplessly while they performed those hideous sacrificial rites. What a fiendish, diabolical plot.
And, Stacy, it almost worked.
But for the courage, daring, and strategy of Jungle Jim, old Nala's fiendish plot might well have succeeded and claimed the lives of young Stacy and his wife, as well as Shanghai Lil. It was a narrow escape, and even the horrible memory of it sends a shudder down the spines of the little group as they watch the dancing flames of the campfire light up the crude shelters as night descends. Don't miss the next exciting episode in the adventures of Jungle Jim. Remember, you can follow the adventures of Jungle Jim in the full-color action pictures which appear in the Comic Weekly, the world's greatest comic supplement containing the best full-color adventure and comic pictures. Remember, no other comic supplement can give you the top names of Cartoonland, like the list of all-star favorites to be found in the Comic Weekly. The whole family follow the fun and frolics of Jiggs and Maggie, Blondie, Tilly the Toiler, Barney Google, and the Little King. The immortal Donald Duck, as well as the exciting adventures of Flash Gordon and Jungle Jim. Join the 11 million adults and 6 million youngsters who every week find the greatest of home entertainment in the Comic Weekly, which comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. More thrilling radio adventures of Jungle Jim will be heard at the same time next week over this same station. Be sure to tune in.
We have one more adventure today. It's the Junior G-Men and the Phantom from Prison, originally aired in 1936.
Donald Peterson presents The True Adventures of Junior G-Men.
The Junior G-Men are on the air, speeding to your homes, ready for action.
Stand by. All Junior G-Men, stand by. Stand by for thrilling details of the Phantom from Prison. Calling all Junior G-Men. Stand by for report of Junior G-Man Dick Powers concerning...
The Phantom from Prison. Conclusion of report number 981 as given by Operator Dick Powers of Ridley.
Well, I suppose you remember that Judge Barker sentenced a murderer by the name of Martin to the electric chair. And the night he was to go to the chair, Dad and I went over to see the judge. As Dad figured that he'd be quite upset. We'd been there a couple of hours when the phone rang. The judge answered it. A voice said, "I'm on my way." Now, Judge Barker was almost positive that the voice was Martin's. And he called the prison immediately to find out when he had escaped. It was told that Martin hadn't escaped, but had died in the electric chair just 2 minutes before. The judge hung up, and then suddenly a face appeared in the window. Martin's face. And the judge firmly believed that he'd kept his promise to come back and get him. Of course, Dad tried to point out that it couldn't have been a ghost, but an enemy of the judge. Now, there were four possible suspects. A mysterious friend of Martin's who'd come to the judge and threatened him. A Mr. Whitney who'd run for judge in opposition to Judge Barker and lost the election. Mr. Peters, the crooked ex-district attorney who'd been removed from office by the judge, and a Mr. Mitchell who'd been sued by a man who'd hit with his car, and because of Judge Barker's decision, had been forced to pay almost $10,000 in damages. Now, a couple of nights after the face had appeared at the window, Dad and I went around to see the judge again. His housekeeper let us in and told us that the judge was in his study. She took us down the hall, and when he found the door was locked, Dad said,
"I'm going to break the lock. Here goes. One, two, three.
Cats, Dad, look. There, lying beneath the open window. The judge.
Good heavens, you're right. Come on, come on.
Gosh, Dad, look, his head's bleeding.
Yes, I see. Thank goodness he's alive. Mrs. Graham.
Yes?
Get some warm water and bandages, please.
Yes, Mr. Powers, I'll be right back.
That's it. Now, come on, Dick. Help me rub his wrists.
Okay, Dad. There, how's that?
Fine, fine. Now, keep it up. I wonder what happened to him. I wonder if he...
Look, Dad. He's beginning to open his eyes.
Oh, Martin. Martin, I... Wait, Martin, don't...
Easy, Judge.
Oh, it's you, Powers. Oh, thank heavens you're here. Martin came back to keep his promise, Powers. He came back to get me. He came back to get me.
And after his head had been bathed and bandaged, Judge Barker felt a whole lot better. The color began to come back to his cheeks. It was then that...
Well, it's a sense you look a lot better than you did when we found you, Judge.
I feel a lot better, too.
Now, do you feel well enough to tell us what happened to you?
Yes, I do.
Good.
Well, I came in here to my study, and because it had been shut up all day, I found it rather stuffy. That's why I opened the window. I had no sooner finished raising it up than the telephone rang. Naturally, I answered it, and the same voice that spoke to me the other night, Martin's voice, spoke again.
Gee whiz! What did he say this time, Judge?
The same thing that he said the last time. It was simply, I'm on my way.
That's all? Just that?
Just that, and then he hung up.
I see. What'd you do then?
Nothing. I just sat there. I didn't know what to do. I thought of calling you, Powers, and asking you to come over. But before I had the chance, I heard someone softly laughing. I I turned toward the window, and then I saw him.
Martin?
Yes, Martin. I jumped up, ran to the window. I reached out and tried to grab him, and then something hit me on the back of the head, and, well, that's all I remember.
Gosh, and you're sure it was Martin?
Yes, yes, I'm positive.
Yeah, but it couldn't have been Martin. He's dead, and, well, it just couldn't have been Martin, that's
well,
all.
Well, I know, Powers. I know it couldn't have been Martin, and yet it was. I saw him just as plainly as I see you now, that purplish scar along the side of his nose, that small black mustache over the thin lip that was always curved in a sneer. But, no, but what's the use? It was Martin. I'm sure of it. And he'll keep his promise, too. He'll get me.
Not if we can help it.
Oh, I'm afraid there's nothing you can do.
Say, Judge, how long did you sit there at the desk between the time you got the telephone call and the time Martin appeared at the window?
About 2 minutes.
2 minutes, eh?
Yes, why?
Well, let's suppose for a minute that Dad is right, that it wasn't Martin at all, but someone who's made up to look like him.
Yes, go on.
Now, if the man who makes the call is the same man who appears at the window, he must make that call from someplace right nearby, since there's only 2 minutes difference in between the call and the appearance.
Say, that's right. I never thought of that, Dick.
But wait, Dad. The best part is yet to come. I know where that ball comes from.
You know where the call comes from?
That's right, Dad.
Where?
From the apartment house next door. There aren't any stores or private homes within 2 minutes walking distance, or even running distance. The call has to come from the apartment house next door, or else the man who appears at the window couldn't possibly arrive in such a short time.
Why, that's right, he couldn't.
And there's a reason for the call, too.
Well, what do you mean, Dick?
Well, whoever makes it wants to be sure that the judge is in the study at a certain time, so that he'll be sure to see the face when it appears at the window.
Why, of course, of course.
Now, how do you know any of the tenants of the apartment house, Judge Parker?
Well, I do know a few, but they're all very friendly.
I see. Well, it's just possible that there's someone living there you don't know, and that someone is an enemy of yours.
Why, yes, it's... Of course.
You know, Judge Barker, if I were you, I'd get in touch with the police. After all, it ought to be a fairly simple matter to check on the tenants of that apartment house, and one of them has to be the man you're after.
Well, I believe you're right, Dick. I believe you're right. And I'm going to do just as you suggest. I'm going to go to the police and tell them the whole...
And that's exactly what Judge Barker did. He went to the police and told a story to a couple of detectives. After he'd finished, they took a picture of Martin with them, went around to the apartment house. When they got there, Judge Barker and the detectives checked over the list of tenants with Mr. Kohler, the superintendent. They went over the list and then...
Well, Judge, what do you say? Do you know of these people whose names are on this list?
No, I don't. You see, although I know a few of the tenants by sight, I don't know their names.
I see. Now, Kohler.
Yeah.
Take a look at this picture.
Yeah.
Does anyone in this building look anything like that?
Yeah, it's the picture of Martin. Yeah, that's the second one I've seen today.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, there was a leak in one of the water pipes that lead into Mr. Doran's apartment. And I had to go inside to fix it. And while I was there, I noticed this picture of Martin on the dresser. It's a funny thing, too. It was mounted on the cardboard.
Oh, so the picture was mounted on cardboard, eh?
Yeah.
That's very funny. Very funny.
That's what I thought. It seemed to me that...
Well, by the way, what do you know about this fellow Doran?
Oh, nothing much, you see. He's only lived here a week. I've only seen him a couple of times. He doesn't come in and go out like the other tenants. Sometimes I think he doesn't even sleep here.
Oh, I see. Did you happen to see him tonight?
Yeah, I did. He came in shortly after 9 o'clock.
Uh-huh. Well, do you know if he's still around?
Well, that I can't say, sir. You see, he went out again a little after 10, and I haven't seen him come back.
What does he look like?
Well, he wears dark glasses and has a little beard. And, well, outside of that, there isn't much I can tell you. You see, sir, I haven't seen much of him.
Of course. Well, Judge Barker, it looks like we found something.
Well, I hope you're right.
You have a pass key to all the apartments, haven't you, Kohler?
Yeah, I have the pass key.
Good. You see, we're going to have a look at Mr. Doran's apartment.
Yeah. Well, if you'll just follow me, I'll lead you right down to Mr. Doran.
And once Judge Barker and the detectives got into Mr. Doran's apartment, they found plenty. In the first place, it was on the ground floor, and you could see right across the alley into Judge Barker's study. They searched the whole apartment and found a complete makeup kit filled with the kind of stuff actors use on their faces. They found some clothes, too. Clothes that the judge recognized as those worn by a man who appeared at his window. Everything fitted together like a jigsaw puzzle. The only thing that remained a mystery was Mr. Duran's real identity. Detectives were stationed in a vacant apartment right across the hall from Mr. Duran's. The following night, Mr. Kohler, the superintendent, rushed in around 9 o'clock. He was all excited.
He's coming. He's coming.
Duran?
Yeah. I just saw him walking down the street.
Good. Now look, Kohler, you run over to the judge's place and get him over here as soon as you can.
Yeah, I do that.
And hurry, do you hear?
Yeah, I hurry. I beat Mark all right.
Well, Lewis, it looks like we're going to action.
That's right, sir.
Better open that door a bit so that we'll be able to hear him come down the hall.
Yes, sir.
Hold it. That's far enough. Now, just get set and listen. Someone's coming. Hold everything. It's Duran, all right. Come on, let's get him.
Right.
All right, Duran, put him up.
Hey, look here, you can't
put him up, Poirot.
All right, I'll put him up.
Look out, he's got a gun!
Nice work, Lewis. You just grabbed his arm in time. Now grab hold of that beard of his and see if it really belongs to him.
Okay, Chief, that'll be a pleasure. Come on, you. Let me get hold of that beard.
Let go of me! No! Well, so it does come off. Take those glasses off, too, Lewis.
Okay, Chief. There you are.
Well, Duran, without that beard and those glasses, you look a lot different. In fact, you look a little like a guy by the name of... but here comes Judge Barker. Let's see if he recognizes you.
So you got him, did you?
Yep, we've got him all right. Here he is.
Why, Mitchell.
Yes, Mitchell.
Why did you do it, Mitchell? Why?
Because I hated you, that's why. Because I've always hated you ever since you handed down that decision against me. It was that guy's own fault that I hit with my car. But you had to award him almost $10,000.
You were drunk when you hit him, Mitchell.
You're a liar, and I ought to
give... Take it easy, Mitchell. Take it easy. You're all through.
Yes, I'm all through. Well, come on. What are we waiting for? Let's get going.
And Mitchell confessed that he intended to kill Judge Barker. He also explained that he'd go to the apartment, and using the picture as a guide, would make himself up to look like Martin. Then he'd call Judge Barker on the phone, and after telling him that he was on his way, would climb out the window, run across the alley, and stand by the study window. It was quite a trick, all right, but like all crooked tricks, it didn't work very long. Mitchell was tried and convicted on a charge of attempted murder, and has already begun to serve a good long sentence. Good night, fellas, and lots of good luck.
Stand by. All Junior G-men, stand by. Stand by for thrilling details concerning the next broadcast. G-men, calling all Junior G-men to proceed at once to points of duty. Calling Junior G-man Joe Hagen to report to Director Donald Peterson at the next meeting on this station to give report concerning...
the counterfeit $20 bill.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening. The RTC Weekly Download is produced by Chris Stone and Jim Dolan.